One of the seifim in the beginning of Shinai and Ches has a rather interesting halacha. It says, even b'ri yaso, even via one's gaze, in yeshbo hezek l'chavero, asur l'stakelbo. If your gaze somehow causes damage, you shouldn't be gazing at a person, at his property, his affairs, his doings. Afikach asur l'adam lamed al sadeh chavero b'shoah shomed es b'kam aseh. One example of that, afikach, is don't look at his field when the crops are in flourishing. This is basically a Gemara. The Gemara is in Baba Basra and Daf Beis. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to look at someone's gina when the crops are growing. Why not? So the Rashbam says, makes an ayin har. Rashbam says that shloi yizikenu b'ayin harap. You're going to harm him by causing an ayin hara. The Sma points out that, the Sma doesn't bring the words ayin hara, but the Sma points out that there are actually two forms of hezek ri'ah, the much more heavily discussed form of hezek ri'ah, hezek that comes via gaze, is actually found back in Siman Kuf and Dalet. That's in the middle of Nizkei Shcheinim, the laws that govern neighbors and causing harm, but kind of zoning types of laws. There's an entire Siman discussion about windows and fences, about people complaining the neighbors can look in through their windows, requiring each other not to build certain windows, to put up fences. So that's discussed at length. It's not, that's something else. That's nothing to do with ayin hara. That has to do with an invasion of privacy. Either that, the way some posts can express it is, you'll see my private affairs, and that itself is bad for me, or I will, in order to avoid you seeing them, I will be forced to have a very limited use of my property. You're going to cramp my style. I'm not going to do anything which is remotely sensitive. That itself is a hezek. You won't see my private stuff because I won't do it, but that means that I'm not going to be able to use my property to the fullest extent. That's the kind of hezek ri'ah that we discussed back in Kufn and Dalet. And the kind of hezek ri'ah, the other kind the Mechaber is mentioning here, is a kind of hezek ri'ah that the gaze itself causes hezek. It doesn't say why, but the reason the Rishonim give is the Rashbam's reason of ayin hara. Now, even though, as I've pointed out occasionally in the past, Shulchan Aruch's language in Chazon Mishpat is largely the Lashon of the Rambam. In all of Shulchan Aruch, especially in Chazon Mishpat, is a very, maybe 90%, as much as 90% perhaps, is Lashon of the Rambam. This particular halacha is not. The Rambam does not bring the din of not looking at someone's garden. He omits it entirely in his Yad HaChazaka. The other dinim of windows and fences, he does, of course, bring. The ones from Kufn Dalet. But this din about not looking at someone's garden, the Rambam omits. And people have wondered why. The Rambam himself was asked why. The Achronim bring a tshuva of the Rambam, that he himself was consulted why. But the short answer seems to be, as Rav Matisyahu Strashin says in his notes in the back of the Gemara, the Rambam in general, as your son quite correctly noted, he was one of the only ones who did a couple of weeks ago when I gave the presentation to the teens, the Rambam does not really believe in the supernatural. The Rambam, therefore, omits virtually everything that in the Gemara that's based on the supernatural. Demons, divine names, magic, evil spirits. The Rambam leaves it all out. And this is a whole shir in and of itself, how many of the Rishonim and earlier Achronim don't seem to have acknowledged as a pattern. They looked for individual reasons in each and every case where the Rambam left something out, something magical, they found a technical reason why. But many later Achronim, even before modern scholars, many later Achronim understood, articulated that it's clear that the Rambam, there's a pattern here, that the Rambam left out everything basically that had to do with the supernatural. This is the point made by the Rav Matisyahu Strashin, the Rosh Hashanah's son. He notes that the Maariv Tzvi already made this point in an essay of his on the Rambam. Marsham, I saw, makes this point. Marsham says that someone asked why the Rambam leaves out the Simanim on Rosh Hashanah. He says, again, Emes Yaradarko, the real answer is that the Rambam leaves out everything that's not natural and scientific. Other examples, the Shalom Eishim says this about the Rambam, so Rambam left it out.
Rabbi, even if you believe in those supernaturals, it's going to be a big grandma. We saw that grandmas are not...
Right, so this is the point that you made when I discussed this a couple of weeks ago Sunday, that Adi is pointing out that even if we accept that this absolutely works, Ayin Hara is a actual, very realistic and very, actually, it still really works, the Ayin Hara, but it may still only be a grum. So that may be true, and I want to return to this point in a moment, but the point is that The Gemara always says, grama is pater. If someone damages someone else's property indirectly via grama, he's pater. However, the Gemara also says, in Baba Basra in the second parak and elsewhere, grama benizakin is aser. You're still not allowed to do things like a chila that are grama. There are all kinds of clever ways of being mazik somebody that you won't be chayav, you won't have to pay and based him, but you're certainly not allowed to do it like a chila. So, and that takes us to the next question, which is, if somebody does cause somebody damage via ayin hara, or any other supernatural means of sorcery, or of by invoking demons, will he be chayav? So Adi's suggestion is perhaps not, because it's only grama. There are several akharim who discuss this, not many, and not halacha l'maisa. There's very little literature on this. But the first one to discuss this was Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz, several hundred years ago. He raises the question, if someone kills somebody via Shem Shemayim, like the Medrash says Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Mitzri by pronouncing the Shem Shemayim, or by, you know, I guess this is what we call voodoo or other things, or by Shadim, Kishuv, I think, is his example. Is he considered a murderer? Will he have the halachic status of a murderer? And he says yes. He feels that it's not grama. He feels that it's actual hezek. Other acharonim also debate back and forth whether this is true or not. Again, there isn't much halacha l'maisa. It's mostly just, you know, theoretical and speculative. But the consensus seems to actually be that you are chayav, that we don't consider it a grama. The Stipler actually has a long essay on this. He makes a very interesting distinction. He says there are two kinds of supernatural, he says. There's the kind where you daven to Hashem, where you request the Beis Shalmala to do something, punish somebody, inflict harm on somebody else. That, he says, is only grama, because it's not you. They do it. Hashem does it. Beis Shalmala does it. It's like if I hire Reuven to kill Shimon, you know, under the law, that's racketeering, that's conspiracy. And halacha, that's called Ein Shlichut V'Aravera, and it's not me. I'm at best only a grama. So too, the Stadler says, if you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you ask Malachim, if you ask Beis Shalmala to bring harm upon somebody, at worst, you're only a grama. However, he says, magic, things which, you know, that you read about in fantasy novels, magic that has rules and a system, and it's just like the physical laws of the world, just a parallel system of laws of cause and effect that have reproducible and predictable and reliable rules. Then he says that you did it. You're not invoking a third party. He says, just like when you use gravity or you use electromagnetic force to do something, doesn't give all these examples, but that's you. If you harness a pre-existing, predictable, stable, reliable force, that's called you did it. So if you harness magical forces, that's called you did it. If you have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you ask Beis Shalmala, that's not called you did it. Take it or leave it, that is the Stapler's idea. And he actually begins his discussion. He was writing to another Rav who had initiated the conversation. He actually begins by discussing this question of Ayin Hara. If you manage to damage somebody's property via Ayin Hara, would you be chayav or not? And he says that this other Rav assumed not. The Stapler says, I'm not convinced. Now, as a practical matter, we always have to point out, it's very hard to establish proof. It's going to be very difficult to ever prove that it was my Ayin Hara or my Kishuv or my Shadim that did it. I suppose you could have cases where the nature of the hezek is so strange or is so immediate and consequent upon what you did that it's clear to everyone that's what did it. But the real world, I imagine, it's going to be very hard to prove that it was actually your hezek that did it. In any event, but you know, the other taina is, as Andy was saying, that it's a question of grama, and that's not necessarily true. That's considered a maisa be a naim. And it's really an open question. As I said, the poskim are not really discussing halacha l'maisa, so we don't really have a definitive answer. I want to discuss one other point, a somewhat different point, also related to this halacha of hezekriya. So as I mentioned earlier, the poskim explain hezekriya several different ways. There's the ayin hara aspect, and then there are the more mundane aspects, either that I prevent you from being able to use your property to the fullest, or that it's an infringement on your privacy. I see things of yours, I see affairs of yours, I see property of yours that you would rather keep private, and that itself is a form of hezek. This comes up, one place this comes up is in a very interesting context. It comes up in the discussion of reading somebody else's correspondence, mail, or today eavesdropping, or even hacking into a computer system. We know that there's a famous Cheirim of Rabbeinu Gershom. There was an old Cheirim against reading somebody else's correspondence. And that's true. There is such a Cheirim. However, the poskim also add a number of reasons why, al pi halacha, it might be aser anyway. Some of them offer these reasons for why Rabbeinu Gershom was misakin his Cheirim. Other poskim seem to suggest that these reasons stand on their own as reasons independent of the Cheirim to act as prohibitions against reading somebody's mail. One of the reasons given is hezek ri'ah. You see from Hezek Re'iyah that that Chazal did not approve of you infringing on someone else's property. So you infringing on someone else's privacy, seeing his private affairs. So the same thing applies to reading his mail. Just as if I stand with my binoculars and look at his property and see his private things, that's an infringement of his privacy. If I read his private correspondence, that's a form of hezekria. That's something many posts have invoked to forbid eavesdropping, reading correspondence, and hacking. Now, the question is, does the Chayim of Ben Gershom really apply to beyond correspondence, to the examples I gave of eavesdropping, of wiretapping a phone, to hacking into a computer system? Some posts can take a kind of very narrow view, very literalist view. Ben Gershom made a Chayim, he made a takana. The takana was for mail, for correspondence, zehu. Strict constructionist, the law, the words mean exactly what they mean. They don't evolve, they don't come to encompass new meanings. The Chayim is what it is, and it cannot be extended to any modern situations that aren't literally questions of correspondence, no matter how strongly we argue the same rationale still apply. That's not the way the law works. Other poskim say no. Zil basar time, we have to extend the Chayim to cover anything, even some of the, in constitutional law, even some of the strictest constructionists agree that the Constitution says that the government has the right to coin money. It's not limited to coin. It applies to, let's say, paper currency also. And in general, there's a certain extent to which even the most literalist people say that's the same thing. That's just the modern example of what the law talks about, of what the Chayim talks about. Some people say the Chayim does apply. Some say it does not apply. Even those who say the Chayim does not apply, though, some of them try to argue that there are other isurim which prohibit eavesdropping. And one of them, again, is hezekria. And that takes us to the parallel question. Does hezekria apply to listening, to eavesdropping? So here we have an interesting... There are basically only two comments in the early poskim about whether hezekria applies to listening. All that kind of bring the same two comments. There's a Meiri and a Tshuva of Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi. Both of them say that it does not apply in their specific cases, but the rationales they give are very different. The Meiri says, both of them are talking about building fences between two neighbors. The Gemara says you have to build a fence and neither one should be able, each one has the right to demand that a fence be constructed so neither one should be able to look into the property of the other. And both of them assume that fence does not have to be soundproof. The fence has to be enough to block vision, to block people from looking in, and it has to be stable, that it shouldn't be too flimsy that it'll collapse right away, but it does not have to be soundproof. Why not? So here, the Meiri and the Re'em part company, they explain the halacha in very different ways. Meiri says, people, when they have something private to say, typically are careful and whispered in low tones and not loud enough to be overheard by people on the other side of the fence. Meiri seems to assume in principle there would be a problem with my eavesdropping, just that we don't have to worry about it because people don't speak their secrets in a loud voice. So if you eavesdrop, the legal notion is expectation of privacy. Meiri says people tend not to have an expectation of privacy when they talk. If they do have one, they're quiet to make sure not to be overheard. If they don't, then you can eavesdrop. But if you wiretap a phone where a person does have an expectation of privacy, many contemporary poskim argue that is hezekria, that is hezekshmiya, because he reasonably expects not to be overheard, he's not careful, and he does discuss private things, and you have a problem, you can't listen. The Re'em says more bluntly, you don't have to build a soundproof fence, hezekria is what Chazal said, they didn't say hezekshmiya, again, a very strict constructionist thing, Chazal only said re'ia, not shmiya, and that's it. And some poskim have suggested that according to the Re'em, there is simply no prohibition at all of hezekshmiya, and eavesdropping would be mutter. Nevertheless, the consensus of contemporary poskim who discuss this question, they're very strongly against eavesdropping and wiretapping and what they call scanners and different types of electronic devices for eavesdropping. They all say the hezekria does apply. They say certainly according to the Meiri and even according to the Re'em just meant the Chazal specific takana requiring you to build fences, they weren't mechayev you to build a soundproof fence. That much Chazal didn't feel you have to do. But deliberately eavesdropping, deliberately taking actions to intercept a private communication, even if it's not re'ia, even if it's not via sight, even if it's via listening or via any other method of eavesdropping, the strong consensus of poskim is that it is usur. Maybe the Chayim or Ben Gershom applies, maybe it doesn't apply, but hezekria is something that most poskim assume does apply. They have various other arguments, v'hafel recha kamocha, you wouldn't like it if someone listened to you. And the consensus of modern rabbanim who discuss eavesdropping is strongly opposed.
Rabbi, must be Hezek. I mean, what if I read the newspaper of someone? I mean, it's my newspaper. I bought it. I paid for it. And I'm just sitting, and someone is reading it from the other side. So there's no Hezek, but it's still private property.
So that's a very interesting question. That's a very good point. One of the reasons I mentioned, there are several other reasons the Post can give why you can't read someone else's mail. One of the reasons they give is exactly what you just said. They say, Shol Shlomi Das. The halacha is, I'm not even allowed to borrow something from you without asking permission. You're actually called a ganav if you do that. So this is the same way I can't just take your glasses or your shirt and just use it, even if I plan to give it back. That's called Shol Shlomi Das. Some poskim argue that using your correspondence, your papers, is a question of Shol Shlomi Das. It's a little tricky. That we discussed this a little bit last night when we discussed intellectual property, because like in your example, the newspaper, for example, it's not clear that Shol Shlomi Das, because usually borrowing something without permission means physically taking it. If I simply look at something, that's, in modern law, we call that intellectual property, we call that copyright, or other types of Yisurim. Halacha is very unclear. Poskim differ very widely as to whether that's a problem. In your specific case of the newspaper, I imagine most Poskim would say it's mutter. If I'm not touching the newspaper, and the information in the newspaper is not your private information. If anything, it's owned by if anyone has a right to it, it's the newspaper publisher or the reporters that collected it or the publisher that printed it. I very much doubt that halakha would give you any right to stop me from looking over your shoulder at a newspaper which doesn't have private information, and certainly you have no proprietary interest. But nevertheless, there are poskim who do indeed say that taking your actual mail, which is your private information and your private paper possibly, and opening and reading without your permission is a problem of Shol Shlomi Das. I'll just close by mentioning there's a very interesting discussion in the Israeli Batei Din. In American law, for example, in Western law, we have the notion that you're not allowed to do an illegal search and seizure. Without a warrant, I can't break into your house and just start reading your papers. And recently, the Supreme Court extended that to a smartphone. Even when the police arrest you, they can't start flipping through your email on your smartphone. So, in the United States, at least, the law is that if they do that, not only do they do something wrong, we say shame, shame on them, they're not allowed to use in a court case any evidence that was obtained, in a criminal case, actually, they're not allowed to use in a criminal case against you any evidence they obtained improperly by reading your mail without your permission, reading your papers without your permission, unless they have a warrant. There were a couple of cases in Eretz Yisrael, in the Rabbanut Batei Din, where a man and a woman were in a bitter divorce case. The man wanted to introduce a tape recording of a conversation his wife had made, which he felt contained compromising information. It would show the Beis Din that she was not behaving properly. He wanted Beis Din to listen to the recording and say, you'll see, you'll listen to what it says here. She said, no, you weren't allowed to make that recording. I didn't give you permission. I want it to be blocked from being introduced as evidence. So the postcom discussed two things. Was he allowed to make the recording in the first place? And even if we say he wasn't, is that a reason why Beis Din shouldn't listen to the recording? So whether the recording was mutter or usser, the consensus is it's usser, either because the cheirim itself applies to secretly recording, listening and recording somebody else without permission and playing in front of the Beis Din, in front of other people, or other people in general, or because it has a griya or the other isurim. The dayanim involved do generally assume that there was something wrong in making the recording. However, they don't have the American legal doctrine that therefore Beis Din shouldn't listen. They say no, information is relevant. My understanding is in much of the rest of the world, the legal systems work that way too. Just because you broke the law in obtaining the recording doesn't mean you can't introduce this evidence. And even in the United States, the law is for criminal cases, not for civil cases. I don't know if it would apply in a divorce case. But in any event, the poskim did generally assume, for whatever pashut more or less, that it does extend to making a recording, an audio recording. And one of them even mentions that the Isser is, like Adi was saying, the Isser is Shol Shlomi Das. It's a form of using even though there's no tangible thing that you recorded, just put a tap on the phone or put a tape recorder next to the phone. You're just recording my conversation, my disembodied voice. That itself is called Shol Shlomi Das. My information, apparently, at least some of the Rabbanim held, is a problem of Shol Shlomi Das. Although with the evidence, they felt that it could still be introduced as evidence to the Beis Din insofar as Beis Din thought that the information might be relevant to the Din Torah.